Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hello and welcome to Creation Animal Care. I'm your host, Tom Majeur, and our subject matter expert is Dr. Edie Hanna. Welcome again.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for being here.
We're glad you're here or we wouldn't have a program. Well, Dr. Edie, it's amazing. We have not done one of these programs in a studio yet.
I didn't know there was a studio. Other than my clinic that I work at. But other than that, that's great. That's good.
We started this program in just a rehearsal. We started it with just a casual conversation after church at the end of December. And 3 weeks later, we're doing our first recording at your clinic in Port Huron, outside of Port Huron. Did we do two or three programs there?
We've done several. I think there's been three or four, actually.
We went over to the Abrams Farm.
Abraham Ranch. Yep. The episode, part one, airing today at 5 p.m. on Strong Tower Radio.
That's right. And then next month, we'll record that. And then when this is aired, it will be the following month, which will be August. It's just kind of exciting all the where the Lord has taken us, and the Lord has really developed this program. It's finding its own niche. In fact, you actually have a group of people who follow it, and we're at the campus of Great Lakes Adventist Academy, and do we have a studio audience? Will you all clap your hands? That's a good way to verify that it's just more than just you and me.
That's true. And I'm glad to know that other than my mom and my uncle and one of my bosses listens, that's great.
That's right. And, you know, maybe those goats and sheep that we were out there with the last time. But anyway, let's start with a word of prayer. Our great Heavenly Father, you love animals. You know, you created them and the fish and the animals and the humans, of course, the plants. We just love your creation. It shows your marvel. It shows your dominion, but that dominion is a loving dominion. And you have placed us to be stewards over these animals, and it's good to know the information that we get from this particular program. Bless us as we discuss this, as we get questions from the studio audience, questions from the clinic, questions from other people who have shared it. Lord, let us to always give you praise and point to you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Dr. Edie, just thank you so much for all your service, and not over at that clinic over in Port Huron. You serve a couple of different places. We're in front of a studio audience here, and they'll be sitting in one of these seats and up to the microphone asking some questions.
Okay.
Do you have any thoughts you'd like to lead off this particular program with?
Sure. So for those who are not familiar with the reason why I agreed to do this program is because my focus has always been on the Bible verse of Proverbs 12:10. And I'm going to read it from this version. It's a children's, it's called King of Everything, Holy Bible. And I'm going to read from this version of it. And just because it just gives a different kind of perspective too. It is Proverbs 12:10. And it says, a good man takes care of his animals, but even the kindest acts of the wicked are cruel. So there's that. And then I also found another verse in this particular Bible from Job 12:10 as well. I don't know what the deal is about 12:10, but the life of every creature and the breath of all people are in God's hand. So just remember, people share this earth with animals, and they may not be just as important, you know, to God, but they're a very close relation. And the fact that he brought these animals to us for our pleasure and not for our destruction, we are to be good stewards for them. And we have to remember that we are responsible for taking care of them and their every need as well. And this world is getting more difficult, and they are crying out like the rest of the earth. So just remember that these animals, they need our attention, our care as well. We are allowed to own some of them, some creatures that were created we will never own until we get to heaven, and we won't even be owning them. We will be visiting them and playing with them like we can't do down here. So just remember that.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to keep a whale in your bathtub.
No comment. I'm not going to say whether I do or don't. So
I do want to appreciate that you put your creative touch. We have stuffed animals. We even have two snakes here on the table.
Yeah, so about the snakes, which, by the way, to me look awesome. But apparently yesterday at our Strong Tower radio booth, they didn't go over very well.
Oh.
There were a few people that backed off from visiting our booth because I had them, well, mostly one of them on my shoulder, but some people actually thought they were real. I had to state that, I'm sorry, they're not real. I mean, to my dismay, they're not real. I was not allowed to bring anything real other than myself to the booth. So, but they look very real.
Yes, they do. Well, we wanted to do this on a question and answer format, and we have Janice Clary. You're from basically Hastings, Michigan. Welcome. You're a longtime supporter and fan of Strong Tower Radio, and we're so glad that you're asking a question to Dr. Edie.
Yeah, praise God. Hi there.
I have a 11-year-old, 15-pound Daisy dog. He's Shih Tzu, Bichon, and Poodle mix. And I inherited from my sister 3 years ago when she died suddenly.
Okay.
And I want to take care of him the best I can.
Okay.
And she used to feed him some kind of canned food, and she used to beg him to eat it because he really didn't like it. And so I really wanted to make sure he was getting good food. I had taken him to some kind of holistic doctor who did some testing about what he's sensitive to and different things. Long story short, my question is, I really thought about being vegetarian, and I am. I would like to make him his home food, because I've heard so much as I was doing research about how certain canned foods not always so good, and a lot of animals seem to be getting cancer. And I'm wondering, if you make your own whole food, maybe that'd be better. And so the veterinarian I was taken into, she said that, well, if you're going to do that, she didn't seem too happy about it, but if you're going to do that, you have to make sure you have all the right nutrients and all the right vitamins and minerals and this and that and the other. So you have to, you know, if you're going to do that. So the question I have is, what is your thoughts about making your own food? That's one question. And about whether it's vegetarian or if it's meat. And what do you think about raw? And if you're making your own vegetarian or raw or you know, just cooked like chicken and several vegetables, what vitamins or nutrients or other things would I need to add to it and how much?
Okay. All right. So the first question is, take me back to the first question, because the rest I can give you an answer for those.
Okay. So if you're going to make your own food, is it okay to do vegetarian?
Okay.
Or cooked or raw?
Okay. So the raw food diets, they do hold a decent amount of risk. I think the risks may outweigh the benefits on the raw food. Well, first of all, I wish they would label that it's actually raw meat. Animals can have the raw fruits and vegetables. Okay. So they can have them cooked. They can have them raw. But it's the meat that's going to be the main issue with the bacteria. They can still hold the E. coli, the salmonella. So you do have to be careful with that. I'm not a huge fan of the raw food diets just because of the fact that they don't have to have it. Yes, your large animals out in the wild, you know, that's what they thrive on. But I think as a pet, whether it's a cat or a dog, I think you should avoid the raw food diet. But you can completely make your pet's food, no problem. The thing is, with the vegetarian versus the meat, they actually have done studies that dogs can thrive on vegetarian diets just fine. So that is not a problem. I have no problem with it. I'm pretty sure they would do just fine on that. There's other sources of protein that they can have, that we can have, that will gladly be, you know, part of their diet program if you decide to use it, like tofu and stuff like that. As for cats, I'm going to say don't ever do the vegetarian diet with cats. They will die. Okay. They will not be healthy at all. They have to have a proper source of protein and that has to come from a meat source. It is just who they are. They have to have, taurine is huge for cats because of their heart. And there have been some diets that have been noted in dogs that if they lack taurine as well, that can cause heart issues. So taurine is very important for both, but highly important for cats. Okay. So keep that in mind. So as for general diets, sure, cook your pet's food. Totally fine. If I would have had the time over my lifespan of owning pets, I think I would have gladly done it. But the reason why the dry food is, it's just more convenient. It's easy. It doesn't take a whole lot of time. The unfortunate thing is that these are highly processed, and what goes in some of these dog foods, you don't even want to know. And the cheaper ones are the worst. So I always tell my clients that if they want a better, higher quality food, and then they ask me, well, what's that? What brand? When you go to the grocery store and you're going through the aisle, you'll see what starts as the cheapest. You're going to want to start from the middle to the higher end. So you can gauge it because that's how they set up those stores. Your very, very cheap foods is horrible. Please, please don't ever feed your pets that. And then as you go through up the aisle, you're just going to want to stick with the middle aisle up to the higher end of the aisle for pricing. But people have to remember, don't go by the bag for feeding because you can actually save money doing that. Don't just pile a whole bunch of food in the bowl. You're wasting it for one thing, and you're wasting money. So don't go by the requirements by the bag. You should properly measure everything out, and some of the requirements are going to be highly less than what the bags are requiring. You just kind of had to talk to a veterinarian about how much, because they have to look at the body condition of your pet, whether it's a cat or a dog. So there's that. And as for how much of the nutrients, you really have to go, I'm going to say online, because as veterinarians, we really don't know the percentages of how much calcium they should have, how much magnesium, how much phosphorus, things like that. There are cats that may have kidney issues, and you want to eliminate some of the high protein diets. So it's all going to be based on how true of a good, healthier pet is. But there are lists of percentages of what kind of nutrients and minerals you should put into these foods. I can't help it sometimes. Sometimes I'm shopping in a store and I'm in a pet aisle, really for not much of a reason, because I don't buy my cat stuff from the pet aisles from regular grocery stores. But I can't help hearing people's conversations while they're shopping in the aisle. And one time I heard somebody's like, oh, let's get this, you know, this great food, and, you know, but it's expensive and it's so nutritious and there's limited ingredients. And they said something that made me really be like, asking them a question about, so I see that you're buying high quality food and you make your own pet's food. And they're like, oh, yes, uh-huh. And so I said, what else do you feed your pet? And they're like, oh, milk bones and things. And like, I had to confront them. Like, why are you spending all this money cooking for your dog? And you're literally buying milk bones that are absolutely terrible for them. A milk bone is like having a candy bar every day. And it is filled with a whole bunch of trash. So highly recommend no commercial dog treats, no milk bones, no pepperonis, no bacon strips, none of that. And just stick with fruits and vegetables as treats and high quality, you know, foods. If you're going to do meats, try not to buy the poor quality meat. Try to stick with the more organic. As for the cancer comment about food causing cancer, with me, I would love people to prove that the cancer is being caused by their food, because I would like to go through their whole entire house and pick out things that could also cause cancer to your pet that you're giving your pet. It's not always just the food. It's everything. You know, we live in a world that the smallest thing is causing cancer. Our pollution outside our door, the candles that we, you know, light in our house, not to saying the candles, but it, depending on the candle, the sprays that we spray in our house, the cleaning stuff, the stuff that the pesticides in our grass, like there's so many things that can cause cancer. So please don't think that the food is causing the cancer. Okay. So
I have a question. When I grew up, nobody made their own pet food. Is this like a trend, or how is that happening?
I'm going to say, yeah, it's a trend. And people have confronted me a lot about that and say, well, I've given my dog, you know, human food its whole life, or dog food, the same brand, its whole life, and it lived to 16 years. And then I stop and think, and I said, you know what? Look at us. How many alcoholics, how many people that drank and they live till 80? It's God's grace. It's God's grace that is allowing our animals and people to live to a certain age for whatever reason, only He knows. But just because you did that, now that you know better, you shouldn't be doing it. So I wouldn't be feeding my pet the stuff that people fed years ago. And I know that they lived a long time, many of them, but that doesn't make it right, does it?
No. Very good. Thank you so much. I have a question here that came probably from the clinic.
All right. I'm going to read this question since Tom can't read a child's writing. Okay. It says, what's the best way to get my bird, a budgie, to stop wanting to breed? Okay. Well, we can't spay and neuter budgies. I would love to, but we can't. However, there are things that can be done. There are environmental factors. There are feeding things that can be done. So for the environment, they like light. So you're going to want to kind of keep them in the dark for about 12 hours of the day, because when it's light out, they do tend to associate with the light exposure, just like chickens, you know, they're like, you know, it's all technical and it's really hard for me because I'm not a bird person. But anyway, it has to do with the light. So you do want to kind of keep them in the dark for about 12 hours a day. Also, too, you should be separating them for a period of time if you know what the male versus the female is. And you have to change up the environment. Sometimes you have to relocate the cage. Sometimes you have to change the stuff in the cage with their items that they're using. You have to distract them. You may have to play with them a little bit more to keep them a little bit more preoccupied. Also, you have to not pet them a certain way. I know it's weird, but I guess for the males, you have to not stimulate them by petting them on their tail and on their like rump area. So don't stimulate them in certain ways. And also for the female, sadly, and of course has to go back to the female, always having to get the pokes, but you can actually give a hormonal injection that will help them to not breed as well. So environmental factors, there are food factors. I think with the feeding, you have to be careful about how much parts of the grain that you're feeding. So there are a couple of things, but it can be done. My suggestion is then don't have a male and a female together, you know, so, okay.
Well, you're listening to Creation Animal Care. We're on location at Great Lakes Adventist Academy doing a remote recording here at the Michigan Camp Meeting with Dr. Edie Hanna, and we'll be back after this break.
When you're taking a trip, it's important to stay on the right road and to follow the GPS or roadmap to be sure that you get to your destination. Likewise, on your trip to heaven, it is vital to follow the roadmap, the Bible, God's positioning system. To do that, stay with Strong Tower Radio as we uplift the Bible and proclaim God's character. If you'd like to help with this mission, go to our secure website, www.strongtowerradio.org, and click on the donate button or call 231-468-2087. We thank you and may God bless you as we proclaim God's character together.
Hello, and welcome back to Creation Animal Care. You're listening to Dr. Edie Hanna, and we have a live studio audience of 10 people here, and they'll be giving us live questions as well as questions that have been prepared in advance. And Dr. Edie, I have a question that's right here. How long does the average dog live?
All right, so how long does the average dog live? All right, it depends on the breed, okay? So there are the larger breeds that are around anywhere between 9 and 11 years. So your Great Danes, your Mastiffs, things like that. And then you have the smaller breeds that can live probably 12 to 16 years. There have been some that have lived a little bit longer, but that is technically the average. The smaller dogs live a little bit longer, of course, always based on how well they're cared for. But your larger dogs are going to be 9 to 11. Your smaller dogs probably around 12 to 16. But again, based on their health, overall health, their lifestyle, things like that, things can interfere. Okay.
Very good. We have a question from the studio audience. Will you please give your name, at least your first name, and what your question, and be close to the mic.
Hi, I'm Jean from Livonia. My question is, I have a beautiful 10-year-old gray cat, and over the last 6 months, she's developed several brown spots on just one eye, and they're seeming to get larger and darker.
Okay. Yeah, you did show me the photo just a moment ago. And it is progressively getting worse. Anything like that, and it can easily be benign. It can be just excessive pigmentation that's happening in around the iris. But when it's progressing that quickly, it is always a good idea to see a full-service veterinarian that has the option of being able to look at it with the ophthalmic scope, okay? Sometimes a full service might have to refer you to an actual specialist, an ophthalmologist. But unfortunately, based on photos, it's great that you have the photos, honestly, so you can see the progression. But really, that is an in-person thing because it could be worst case scenario. It could be cancer. Sometimes tumors behind the eye can cause that, but usually will also cause a little bit of bulging. But it easily could just be excessive melanin and pigmentation in the eye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
That is a real question. And, you know, that's one thing that's wonderful about this program, Dr. Eady, is the fact that these questions are from real people and you can hear the emotions and thoughts behind it.
Yes, that is true. They are from real people because otherwise non-real people wouldn't be able to do anything, would they, Tom?
No, Gary would say use AI. But anyway, here's a question for you. It's been submitted. I'm going to tier this. It says, how much school do you need? But I would say there are multiple careers within veterinary care. So could you say, what is the entry level, how you could get into? Some people just love animals and they would like to just get their foot inside the clinic and have an experience. Sometimes you can volunteer at clinics like yours.
Yeah, so if you truly want to be a veterinarian, though, the program can be usually about 6 years. It's not the full program. The program itself is 4 to most veterinary schools, but it's usually you want 2 years of a general education requirement. Because I actually went to class with several people that just got their general requirements. They were going to Michigan State for their just general stuff, and then they applied to vet school and they got accepted. So some of them was only 6 years. Me, my story is completely different. I went many, many years, but that's because I had to work a lot to get the money to get to vet school. So I had a lot of classes that probably were not even needed. So veterinary school, I would say about 6 years minimum. If you want to go to veterinary technician school, 2-year program. Some people just want a veterinary assistant certificate. You can find programs that may last 9 months. So if you really, truly want to work with animals, sometimes you can find to get your foot in the door just to apply for kennel help. You can learn so much on the job. I, myself, actually went from just a so-called ward manager, which was just kennel help, to being a surgical technician assistant in a full-service veterinary clinic. This was well before veterinary school. So I got my foot in the door just as a cleaner and became, you know, much, much more just from learning. And you have to be a good learner, too. But anyway, yeah, so there's a variety of ways to get your foot in the door. But for the schooling as a veterinarian, I'd say 6 years.
I appreciate that answer. Bethany, what is your question?
So I have a cat that unfortunately right now she is having to live in a kennel in my house because she urinates inappropriately. So last summer, we kept smelling the smell in the room where we have our family worship. That's what we call it, our family room. We have a TV in there and we do worship in there. And my husband hangs out in there some. And I have my sewing stuff in there. And we just kept smelling, you know, cat smell. And I moved a tote. And when I moved the tote, I discovered that the cat had been peeing up against the tote and it was running down and my carpet. I mean, it took hours to even get the carpet even sort of clean. So I thought, oh no, maybe she has a urinary tract infection because I have three cats in the house and my two females have had urinary tract infections before. And so I got her into the vet and they said, yeah, let's give her this antibiotic. And I did, and the urination did not stop. And then I took her back to the veterinarian, and they put her on a medication that's supposed to make her be calm and happy, like Prozac for cats, I guess. And it kind of made her a little loopy and sleepy, and I would let her out of the kennel, and she'd go urinate. Only this time I have chalk pads there and taped against the wall so she can't, like, damage the carpet anymore. But every time I let her out of this kennel, she goes and urinates in the same spot. And we can't seem to break her of it.
It's the exact same spot.
Yes.
And you said there's a tote there.
There was a tote.
There was a tote.
I moved the tote.
Any chance you thought of maybe putting a litter box exactly at that spot?
I have thought about it, but I also have a German Shepherd.
Oh.
So the German Shepherd actually has developed a fondness for the litter.
Oh, brother. Okay.
So my litter box is actually in a kennel that has an opening that's like 6 inches.
Okay.
And it
where the dog can't get.
Right. The dog can't get in and the cats can get in. And then I have another door on the side of the kennel. So when I need to scoop the litter, which I try to do every day, every other day. And so I open it up and I take the box out and I scoop it and I put the box back in there.
Okay.
Because, yeah, my dog will help herself.
Yeah, that's hard. I do have several questions, though. So how long has this been going on?
It started, I want to say, 3 years ago at camp meeting. And both of the cats had urinary tract infections. At that time, they peed on my bed while we were at camp meeting. And it's been hard to actually find a vet, like, that will get you in less than 3 weeks. So that's been kind of frustrating. Because I'm like, I think she has a urinary tract infection and I have to wait 3 weeks. So we treated both of the cats and not the cat that has the major problem, but the other cat had to take like 2 rounds of antibiotics because it was a really bad infection. And she cleared up and she's been fine. And then we thought everything was good. But then last summer was when, like, she was peeing up against the tote and maybe in a chair. And, yeah.
So it does sound behavioral, but here are the thoughts that go on in my head just for anybody else out there that might be experiencing this. And this might not be your cat's case, but one of my questions that I like to ask is, are the cats declawed?
No.
Okay, so that's great.
I clip their nails.
Okay, great. Because declawed cats actually will eliminate outside the litter box almost a lot as they get older because they're becoming more painful in the feet.
And she's an older cat.
Okay. How old?
I think she is about 14 now.
Okay. Older cats then also can do that because sometimes they're hurting on the inside. They hide themselves very well for pain. And if it's very comfortable for them to eliminate outside the litter box against a wall, they don't have to step up on anything. You know, they don't have to make the effort of jumping up. Has this cat been jumping on anything or is it probably not allowed because it's in a crate a lot?
He's not a good jumper.
If she's not a good jumper, there might be some underlying issues with her joints or her hips or a spine. So keep that in mind.
Okay.
Also, too, with cats that have chronic urinary tract infections and they're just constantly being put on antibiotics, which annoys me personally, because after two rounds, if they're consistently having urinary tract infections, they should be ultrasounded or x-rayed for possible stones in their bladder. Okay. So even if there's no crystals in the urine. Okay. So keep that in mind, that consistent urinary tract infections, there may be some stones that need to be ultrasounded to see if they have that. But cats do become painful, and they can't do the things that they used to do when they were younger. They hide it very well, though, and it's so hard to pinpoint where exactly on the cat the pain could be. But arthritis, they do get. And my suggestion is to talk with your veterinarian and maybe consider something called gabapentin, which could just be temporary, just to see if it may help the cat. I would try putting a litter box there with some sort of, maybe the crate, like you see the crate that's in front here, maybe maneuver it somehow if you know somebody or you yourself is fancy and can cut a hole that's proper to fit the litter box, and then your dog won't get in it. I'm just so curious to see, honestly, if the cat will use the litter box if it's sitting there, and a very shallow litter box, a very shallow one. This is weird, but if you go to, you know, BJ's or Costco or Sam's, and you know when you're exiting and you have all of those boxes available to you out the, as you're exiting the door.
You mean like cardboard box?
Yes, the cardboard boxes. They have little ones that I pick up all the time for kittens because, you know, kittens can't like jump up in a litter box. So they have little shallow ones. You get a bunch of those little shallow ones and put some litter in it. See if your cat, because it really can't step up too far into it. Maybe that will make a difference if it knows that it has access to litter and it doesn't really have to jump up into anything to use the litter box. Try that, and then your enzymatic sprays, of course. But I think a drugged animal that's going to live out its life as being drugged all the time for anxiety purposes is not the best situation. Even though, you know, you get to have it. But if it gets to sit in a cage the rest of its life, what kind of life is that?
Exactly. And that's a hard decision.
Yeah, it is.
Because you don't want to make the wrong decision.
I understand. I would do what you are willing to do financially to see if this cat truly has some underlying health issues that you can work with. But if not, you know, I really do. I am geared towards more. It's just uncomfortable trying to get up in the litter box. So think about how you can maneuver something in that corner, just even temporarily, because if it will use a litter box there and it's a shallow litter box, it may be the cat is uncomfortable somehow. And if it's consistent urinary tract infections, you know, are your cats overweight by chance? Do you know?
This cat is a little overweight.
Yes. Okay.
The other one is not.
Okay. Okay. And then what kind of food are you feeding? But
I'm trying to remember the brand. I think it's an Iams brand, and it's like supposed to be for urinary care.
Okay. Okay. And yet they're getting urinary tract infections. Yeah. That's interesting.
They weren't on that food before. Yeah. When they were getting the urinary tract infections originally, they were on like a Rachel Ray, just, you know.
Well water? Are they on well water?
Yeah, we have well water.
I do know a lot of people that live in the country, too, that have well water, but they actually will buy their pets the bottled water or gallons of water and feed them the spring water because of the high mineral content that can be in well water sometimes.
Very good.
And there is some well water that you know is very odorous and tastes awful, while other well water, you know, tastes fine. But even you might want to get filtered, you know, too, as well. But anyway, just consider the water source as well.
Well, very good. You used one term that was behavioral. What does the term behavioral mean?
Behavioral means that instead of them having a sickness where they have stones or where they have, you know, pain, things like that, behavioral just means that they have an attitude and they will do things just because they don't like what's going on in their situation. So cats will sometimes urinate on items like the middle of the bed if the owner goes away for a period of time and doesn't talk to them or look their way. And if their litter boxes aren't changed properly, they will urinate. For dogs, a behavioral issue will, like, especially male dogs, because males always have behavioral issues. Anyway, so they will urinate anywhere they feel like it, sometimes in the house if they're not neutered. So that is, you know, behavioral. Male dogs, especially because they're marking their territory. So those are kind of things that are based on behavior and not an actual sickness, you know, that's more complicated.
When my husband and I were first married, we had a Scotty. We lived in a trailer. The Scotty would poop in the hallway every time I vacuumed the floor. So,
okay.
I put the dog outside and then I vacuumed. And it was fine.
So yeah.
I think the vibrations, it just couldn't handle it.
Yeah. So something triggers their something in their mental state and then they just act accordingly.
Very good. One last question before we go to the break. My cat attacks when angry. What do we do about this?
I have so many questions for some of these questions. My cat attacks when angry. Well, what did you do to it? You know, that's part of my question. And I would also, too, resort to, is it declawed? You know, because honestly, declawing causes underlying pain. So I would question about the environment. What kind of changes have recently been involved, especially when there's, you know, maybe they just got a new dog or another new cat or something. It could be something the owner is doing. So there's so many other questions that I have, but the cat could not be feeling good. And that's how they're reacting. So if it attacks when angry, I suggest journaling in a sense of marking it down when it seems to happen, what events seem to happen just before the event takes place, what's going on. Maybe the house is too full. Maybe it's too noisy. Maybe it's too active. Something that is causing it to do. Maybe it just doesn't like that person. You know, there's so many things. Really, these animals don't speak and we just have so many questions ourselves and we have to narrow it down and it can be very difficult sometimes. And sometimes it's a matter of rehoming. And sometimes I am a proponent of euthanizing for major behavioral issues.
Very good. I really appreciate that, Dr. Edie. And we have another person sitting here ready for a question, but we have to take a break first. So this is Creation Animal Care at the Michigan Camp Meeting, and we'll be right back after this break.
Hi folks, Jelaine Fenner here. We are definitely living in uncertain times, and for some of us, it's scary. Signs of the times are everywhere. Jesus is coming back soon. Read Revelation chapter 22. Jesus says, "Surely I am coming quickly." We at Strong Tower Radio have a free book for you called The Great Controversy. Go to the back of the book and read chapters 35 to 42. It'll help you understand the times we're living in and what's ahead. This book even has 800 historical quotes and 1,200 Bible quotes. I love this book. Call Strong Tower Radio today, 231-468-2087, and ask for The Great Controversy while supplies last. And if we don't answer, please leave a message asking for The Great Controversy with your name, address, and phone number. That's 231-468-2087. On Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
We're back with Creation Animal Care with Dr. Edie Hannah. We're here at the Great Lakes Adventist Academy at the Michigan Camp Meeting, and we've had some really good questions, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. Yeah, I appreciate those.
And we have even more. We have Joey up next. Joey, what is your question?
Well, hey, well, a little background information. I got this cute little Chocolate Lab puppy about a year and a half ago. And, of course, they're perfect as puppies, right?
Hmm.
And, well, I named him Kipchoge because I wanted him to be a runner like Eliud Kipchoge, is a marathon athlete. So I kind of just ran with him without a leash from day one. You know, we just kind of liked... I just wanted him to be athletic. I didn't take him too long. But anyway, let's say a long story short, he still likes to run. He's very athletic, but he's a little bit out of control and he has problem with reactivity. Okay, we waited a year to get him neutered. So we thought maybe that was the problem. but we take him to 3 different classes. They're gentle. How do you say it? The positive reinforcement classes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's progressively gotten worse. He's very smart, so he can do all the tricks. He can do everything else. But when he gets around other dogs or sees that they're excited or makes eye contact, he's so strong and he's a little out of control. So we've been put in the naughty spot the last class, you know, just like where he can't see the other animals. And I was wondering if there's a way to deal with a dog that, I mean, I don't know if that's a euphemism, reactivity instead of aggressiveness. And he hasn't bit anybody yet. But how would I, we do have another dog and we have families that have dogs and he's gotten used to them. But just in a situation with other animals, I have to take him running at midnight now because I don't want to run into any animals. And the other thing, he's not really bitten anybody. He likes to play this game where he takes your glove when it's wintertime and goes, you know, takes off with it and runs away. And so he's been doing that to people that aren't wearing gloves. And he has a soft mouth, but he scratches. And that scares the dickens out of me because I wouldn't want that to happen to anybody. So I'm wondering what you think about the e-collars, that kind of thing, and medication, if we're getting his confidence level up so we can, you know, deal with some of these issues. He's very smart.
No, that's understandable for sure. So when you're running him at night, is he still off leash?
Yeah.
Okay, that's not a good idea. I would not do that. So I would get him trained with a leash properly. I would have some sort of halter around your waist and have him attached to your waist as you're running so you don't have to hold the leash. But is he food motivated at all?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I would have treats as well. I would slow down your running and get him where you're able to run with him with the harness around your waist, him attached, and him like doing slowly but refocusing so he's able to grab a treat if he's food motivated. And I would do this in the daytime where you know his trigger points are so that you can train him past his trigger points. But a dog like that, even though I don't think he's dangerous, I would definitely not be running him without some sort of connection to him so that you can grab him properly. Because even at midnight, there are things that can come out that will make him react. So you don't want to take any chances whatsoever. And the collars, it's funny because you say e-collars. The first thing I think of is the big cones on their heads, you know, the cone of shame. But I know what you mean is the electric collars now. Yeah, I'm okay with those for minor behavioral things that you're trying to correct them for. But I would not use them for very long. If it's not working within a certain time frame, then I would completely eliminate that from your sources. And then meds. Yeah, I hate putting dogs on meds at such a young age for behavioral issues. And I don't think it was because he wasn't neutered younger, even though, you know, everyone knows I'm a huge proponent of spaying and neutering, you know, basically at birth, but that's not true. But a year old for a lab is not that bad. So it shouldn't have been a problem because of that. Sometimes I worry about then what's going on the inside of his brain. You know, there are times, and I saw this in one case where even, and my favorite breed really is a Chow Chow. And I know people think I'm crazy, but I do love them very much. And, you know, we had this little Chow Chow puppy that would come in many, 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 many years ago before I was even a vet. And it was mean. It was so mean at 8 weeks old. And I'm just like, what is your problem? Well, over time, it, at a young age, had a brain tumor that caused it to react like that. And, get, you know, at least gave it a reason to why it was so evil. But some of these dogs that are changing behaviors so quickly do concern me for what's going on in their brain activity, for sure. But certain stimulations can cause behavioral issues in the sense of him being reactive. Any major changes at home like that really set him, like, did somebody leave and go away for college or did the same
person? Actually, now that you mention it, we did have an exchange student was there for, you know, like for his puppyhood. But I do have to mention that our original dog, who I wanted to be a marathon runner, broke her leg. So that was one of my motivations for getting another dog that could run with me. And she's a lab too, but when we wanted to breed her, the vet said, no, she's way too quirky. And she had problems with, like, she was less sociable even than this dog, because this dog gets used to dogs and it's fine, but it's just the initial, you know, like, he's just so nervous initially. And so, like, we had a canine trainer and he taught her just to look away. And then so she comes like underneath my legs, and it's just like the avoidance because she just hates other animals. But in his puppyhood, it took her a very, very long time to be friends. I mean, like, we had to keep them separated because she just has such an aversion to other dogs. So I'm wondering if some of that behavior is learned, like, because she, you know, like, I don't know. Dogs can influence other dogs.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, they do, because I don't know if you are aware that some people will get a puppy when they know their dog is aging out and will possibly die soon. So they'll get the young puppy because they want that puppy to be influenced by the older dog before the other dog passes. Yeah, so that they know to go outside to go potty. That's how a lot of my clients will train their new puppies. If they have a very much older dog, the potty training is so easy because the puppy will go out with the older dog and the older dog is teaching it what to do and how to do it. So yes, they do influence. They are influenced by other dogs and their behaviors.
Another thing too is I have a little bit of anxiety, but my mom, I live with my mom and she went with the training classes with me, and you can just like smell it in the air. And I wonder if
they can feed off of you. Yes,
absolutely. Take drugs before I go.
Right. But it is absolutely true that the dogs will feed off the energy of the human. I get that so much. When I have clients coming in the morning, dropping off their pet for spay and neuter, they will blame their dog. We're like, he's so anxious. I go, are you sure it's the dog or is it you? And I literally will say that to them, and they're like, oh, yeah, well, I am too. You know, I can tell. And then as soon as the dog is away from the owner and in my hands, they will see the difference because, you know, I'm not a high anxiety person. And they will see that the dog is reacting differently in my hands and my presence because of the fact that I'm not anxious, but they're feeding off the owners. And we'll do a lot of services sometimes with owners not being even in the same room. And we can get away with a little bit more. So it very well might be the fact that your dog is feeding off of the energy from the other dog and from the people inside. I would not necessarily resort to putting it on medication right away. And neither should you be on medication. But I do think that there should be some sort of relaxing and quiet moments between the two of you guys.
Would you think about, like, kind of reversing it a little bit, teaching him aside from other animals and quiet?
Restarting, yes.
Starting.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I will use that term to retrain dogs when, if I get a phone call a week or two after they've been fixed, sometimes spaying and neutering, they will be like, oh, now my dog is peeing on the inside of the house and has never done that before. What did you do? And I'm like, listen, the drugs affect the brain a little bit. So sometimes you just have, it's a matter of retraining the dog to just go back outside. And it takes about a week or two for them to get, you know, back on track. But I would recommend retraining as if you're retraining a puppy. Okay,
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Joey is a runner. And is there a different type of dog that a person should have if they are a runner? Or can you train any dog to be a runner?
Yeah, no, you can't have just any dog as a runner. I would stick with your more sporting type dogs for sure. Yeah.
So labs are okay.
Labs are okay. Yes, labs are fine. And huskies are good runners as well. And Jack Russell Terriers. So anything that you need to expel their energy quite a bit. But yeah, Shih Tzus, no.
One thing about the way Sarge, if he wasn't quite so strong, I would try that. But maybe I need to hold off just because we live right by Lake Michigan, and as motivated as he is by food, he doesn't care as soon as he smells water. So we get
okay. Oh, he's the lamb that likes the water. Oh, that's nice, because, you know, not really all labs do. So.
Oh, really?
Mm-mm. Nope, absolutely not. But you can also retrain that too. So my advice when I get puppies in is I tell them to tie a rope around their waist and have the other end attached to their dog. And literally, no matter what the person is doing inside the house, that dog will literally has to go with them, whether it's doing dishes, whether it's doing laundry, whether it's going up the stairs because you forgot something or downstairs or whatever, going to the basement cleaning. That dog is by your side, attached the whole entire time, sometimes for maybe 2 hours, I'd say max, just doing regular stuff, not acknowledging the dog a ton, except for praising it and giving it a small treat because of the fact that it's being so good. And literally, if you have to drag it around the house, you keep going. Don't even worry about what the dog's doing. They'll eventually follow. But always have the reinforcement of the treat, a small treat.
So train with a leash is what mm-hmm. you're saying with that.
Yes.
Even though I should have been doing it from day yeah. one.
Yes. But we can't go back in time. If we did, there's so many things I'd change.
That's why we need you.
And I heard the term training multiple times. You're pretty big on training.
Yes. Training animals, training people. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
They both need training.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Joey. Here's a question here that we have. Should we take in a stray cat?
Actually, it says, should you pet stray cats? Should you pet stray cats? You need to be careful with petting stray cats. Me? You know, I know what to look for. Even if a stray cat comes up to you and is rubbing on your leg, okay, yeah, you can pet it. But be very careful because that particular cat, if you pet it enough, it might be one that like can't take the overstimulation and literally will turn around and grab you and nab you. Okay. So you have to be careful petting stray cats because a lot of these stray cats are not vaccinated properly, especially for rabies, which in many states, cats don't have to have rabies. That is required by law, but it is such a good idea to have your cat vaccinated for rabies regardless. But it's not a good idea to teach your kids or for you to just go around petting stray cats unless it is a little tiny kitten because, and sometimes even them, because literally they'll turn around and nab you with their claws or with their teeth. And they do carry some bacteria in their mouth that if they do bite you can cause some major damage. So just be careful petting the stray cats. My suggestion is to let them be, unless you're trying to help get them spayed and neutered as outdoor cats, TNRs, or something like that. But be super, super careful because, again, they can do some damage as well. And completely unaware. I mean, you think, oh my goodness, this is such a nice kitty. But like I said, an overstimulant move, boom, they've got you. So just be careful. Don't highly advise it.
Okay, we have Denise from Troy, Michigan. And what is your question?
We, as you know, just inherited two dogs, Jack Russell and Chihuahua Jack Russell, both super high energy. And they were living with my father-in-law, and he lived way up north, and they had no life experiences, no neighbor noises, no anything. We live in Oakland County. That is not the life that we have. We have neighbor noises. We have, you know, they're at the campground with us. There's a lot of people and just high energy barking. From the Jack Russell, mostly. The other one also gets super overstimulated and she's not fixed. So then she starts to try to dominate, or I'm not exactly sure what's going on there. So,
yeah. Because they're older, it is going to take quite a bit of time. And sometimes, no matter how hard you try and for how long, some of those things will still remain. Because you don't know exactly what traumas they've been through when they were younger and what they've had to deal with. And how many changes in their life they've had to have. So it might stick around for quite some time, no matter how hard you try, but doesn't mean you don't try. So I would recommend a couple of things. Number one, having, as my friend Lisa always talks about, boundaries, right? So having boundaries for these guys in the sense of limit where they're allowed to be, even in your own home. Okay, making sure that you start small, and once they've achieved certain hurdles, then you give them more leniency.
They are only allowed in like the living room and the kitchen, and they're not allowed in the kitchen when we're cooking food or when we're eating.
Oh, perfect.
And they're really good listeners. They seem to be learning pretty quickly. and doing a lot of praying.
That's awesome.
You know, they are sweet dogs and they are learning pretty quickly. We immediately got them good harnesses that we could control them on a leash better. Even though we have retractable leashes, you want to talk about that?
Okay, yes. Retractable leashes are the worst leashes you could possibly have for a dog. They cause major injuries and they're not good training tools. But okay. I'll let you continue.
Okay. So I'll have to rethink that. But yes, so we do keep them on a pretty short leash, even though they're retractable, unless we're in an area where we can give them a little more space. So we don't really retract all the time or anything. But anyway, we did do harnesses and we're trying to get them out in the world a little bit more and slowly introduce new experiences. That does seem to be working. What do you think about spritzing them with water when they bark?
I probably would, instead of just water, I would probably consider putting something that's a little bit more stronger, a little bit not full force, but maybe some vinegar that has that smell that can deter them. Something else you might want to consider, it's really hard because the little dogs, I worry about collapsing tracheas because they do have tracheal issues. And I know your dogs have the harnesses, but I also know how using either a slip lead or sometimes a training choker or collar is helpful in some cases, and it's always helpful in the bigger dogs, and I haven't seen it much in the little dogs, but redirecting their attention. Are your dogs, those two little dogs, food motivated?
Yes.
Okay.
Especially cheese. Love cheese.
Okay.
Any kind of people food, yeah.
Okay. So either that, but I would, for at least a couple weeks and intermittently in certain types of walks, whether it's in the morning or even whether it's inside your home, train them properly with a regular neck leash that you can give a little tug and get their attention. So especially when you know what their triggers are, because will they bark in the house to something outside?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Anything.
So maybe a little bit of a training leash that goes around their neck that as soon as they start, you get their attention and you distract them with food. You're not praising them, but as soon as you know that that trigger is coming or set something up where you can plan the trigger and get their attention before it even starts and redirect their attention. And sometimes using a spoon with a little bit of baby food or some treats, things like that before the trigger even starts, or even doing it at the window that they're looking and be like, no, talking to them, redirecting them, setting them down and just constantly like reinforcing them with food until that trigger passes. So they might see it coming, not react quite yet because you're going to head it off right off the pass. So that, and see how that goes. But then, you know, it might take some time for these guys to learn. And the next thing is get the other one spayed.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Very good. But yes, we'll talk more.
Well, thank you so much. It's been great. This is our great experiment in our first season of Creation Animal Care. You have been listening to Creation Animal Care with Dr. Edie Hanna. I'm your host, Tom Mazur, from the Michigan Camp Meeting at Great Lakes Adventist Academy for Strong Tower Radio Broadcasting. Bye now.